Tēnā koutou katoa e te iwi whānui. Tēnā tahuri mai ki te reo irirangi o te hiku o te ika i tēnei haura. Ko Daphne Popata hau. E haere ake nei ko te whiritua ngāhuru mātahi o te hōtaka o te pūtahi. I tēnei wāhanga ka kōrero tahi a Kingi Gilbert rau o ko Tui Gilling, kia Manu Keri, o Hikurangi Enterprises, me tākuta māta Reichert, o te whare wānanga o Messi, mō ngā hua o te tarutaru. He kaupapa nui tēnei ko tau tohingia i ngā kāwanatanga no mai rāno. Ai haka aroana te kāwanatanga i aia neina, ki te haka turetia, i te tarutaru marijuana, ki roto i Aotearoa mō ngā take haura. A ka kōrero tahi te paiwhiri mō ngā rawa, ngā ture, mō ngā āhuatanga whakahaere, ina ka haka tūturutia āture tēnei kaupapa. Nō reira e te iwi, tēnā noho tonu mai ki te reo te hiku o te ika, ki te hakarongo ki te pūtahi o ngā kōrero kua whāriki hia.
Tēnā rā koutou katoa ko Kingi Gilbert tōku ingoa, he uri a hau no Tainui Te Aroa a me toko maru waka. Cannabis and social enterprise is the discussion on today's episode. Once again, I'm here with my hoa Tui Gilling. Tēnā koe Tui.
Tēnā koe Kingi.
There are two special guests, our Manu Hiri. We're here with Manu Keri. He's co-founder of Rua Bio and Hikurangi Group. Manu is of Ngāti Hauā, Ngāti Pūkenga and Tainui, and is also married into Ngāti Porou. Manu has experience with the World Bank and is working on a range of investments into cannabis, bioactives, and carbon farming. Tēnā koe, Manu.
Kia ora, kia ora.
We're also here with Martha Reichert, is a senior research officer at the Shaw and Whariki Research Centre at Massey University. She is Polish, has worked in Jamaica, and at the European Monitoring Centre for Drugs and Drug Addiction in Lisbon. Kia ora, Martha.
Kia ora, kato.
Thank you so much for making our show today. So before we get into some kōrero about social enterprise, I just wondered if you could both outline what's happening in the with the medical cannabis sector in New Zealand, and also a little bit of a background on the reforms that are currently in play. So.
Sure. So in terms of medicinal cannabis law reform, we've already had a legal change there. So the new medicinal cannabis scheme entered into force 3 months ago at the beginning of April. And this regime aims to improve the access to medicinal cannabis products that any Kiwi can obtain from a pharmacy on prescription, so that you can go to your doctor and ask for medical cannabis products. Now, in terms of how this regime is being implemented, there are some issues in that we're still waiting for domestically produced, more affordable products. And I think Manu would be better positioned to explain what actually the industry is doing and where we are can expect to have these products on the market.
Yeah, sure. So we've got an industry association. There's about 30 companies that are part of that. Some of them are just the labs, but quite a few in the cultivation and manufacturing areas. And we talked to the ministry this week. There's been about 22 applications. I think 18 were for cultivation and 7 so far for manufacturing. And the same application can have a number of different activities as part of it. We submitted, there were quite a few applications submitted in April, some also in May and June, but those that were submitted in April are going through the process. The ministry have 3 or 4 that they're now making appointments with to come and visit. They've got to do a site audit. And after that, they can issue the license. So they were saying that that should happen over the next month, those visits. So we're still probably 6 weeks away from licenses being issued. And beyond, so that's just for medicinal cannabis licenses. Some of those are for importing only. So all the products that are available on the market at the moment, you can get a prescription from your doctor. There's 2 or 3 suppliers that are importing product, and you can, as Marta said, get a prescription and go to a pharmacy and purchase those, but they are still very expensive. And so we're still, after that process, we have to go through another licensing process for what's called GMP, which is a pharmaceutical. Any pharmaceuticals have to be GMP compliant, and that's the standard that New Zealand regulators set. And that's quite an extensive process. So we've been working on just the documentation and the facilities for that for the last 18 months, and we're ready to submit our GMP documentation, but that's another 3 or 4 months away from being processed. And once we have that certification, the products that we make under that license are recognised in New Zealand, Australia, Europe, and other places. So there's still a bit of water to go under the bridge, but everybody's working as fast as they can. And so in terms of New Zealand product, I don't expect to see anything on the market until the very end of this year at the earliest, possibly into next year. And the cost of them, based on our estimates, it's going to be fairly similar to the cost of imported products at the moment. So unfortunately, the regulations didn't address the affordability they were intended to. You know, if we make it locally, it should be cheaper. Because we're all new companies, there's a lot of costs in getting established, so it's still going to be expensive for some time. New Zealand's a very small market, so the stuff that's produced in Canada and places is produced in much larger facilities than anything that New Zealand's building. So it's going to, you know, there will be economies of scale from those producers that we'll have to compete with as New Zealand producers. So in terms of the actual price, we're unlikely to see it drop hugely, I think, even with local production, unfortunately. And so, yeah, that's an issue, and we don't have subsidies. In places like Germany, they have about 2/3 of prescriptions are fully subsidised by the health insurers, and that's a regulation over there, but very few markets provide subsidies to these products because they're not proven through clinical trials. We're still some time away from that, you know, and then that's what you can get Pharmac subsidies for. But again, where medicinal cannabis sits in the Pharmac priorities is, you know, that's a long way away. You know, we've put probably at least five years, maybe 10 years away from a New Zealand product being taken through a full clinical trial process. So it's not going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately.
And so can I just add that these products are mostly pharmaceutical dosage products. So they are like oils and pills and lozenges, this kind of stuff, rather than cannabis dried herb, which may be allowed for vaping, but not smoking. So that is not included in the medicinal cannabis bill.
Correct. Excellent. So the reform bill applies to public use, or are we talking company use? Both.
So what we were talking about now was medicinal cannabis scheme. So you can go to your doctor and get the prescription from pharmacy. You take it and you can use it medically now. So that's already in place. But as we outlined, these products are still expensive, and it's going to take some time for the price to go down, and therefore the affordability and availability is really to improve. So that's one thing, that's for medical patients. But now, this September, there will be a referendum on legalization of recreational cannabis. That is a different topic, because recreational cannabis market means that anyone over the age of 20, so the government wants to make it legal for people 20 years and older, can go to a licensed retailer store and buy cannabis for smoking. That is a different product, and anyone can use it for pleasure, for recreational purposes. So this is like, some people compare it to having a glass of wine, right? And anyone can do it, no requirement for prescription, nothing like this. This is like having a glass of wine, let's say.
Yeah, probably just to also that, so there's medicinal pharmaceutical cannabis down one end of the spectrum, there's recreational down the other that you know, use to get high and have a psychedelic experience. In the middle somewhere, there's wellness products, which people may want to take not to get high, but because they're actually therapeutically helpful, but they're not classified as medicines because they haven't been through the same pharmaceutical manufacturing process and clinical trials and so on. And so there's overseas in most market, many markets, there's sort of CBD products particularly, but also some which have low levels of THC or balanced THC CBD that people use for health reasons in sports recovery, those sort of things. We're talking to an ex-All Black who uses CBD regularly. He got it in South Africa and found it very helpful for a long-term injury to relieve pain and inflammation. So there's those sort of uses which aren't, you know, he can't have THC in his products, but neither can, people using it in many of those cases use it affordably because it's difficult to access as a prescription medicine. So in the middle somewhere, which would be available under the legalized regime that's being proposed, are those sort of products which potentially make therapeutic purposes more accessible than pharmaceuticals will be.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I guess I only add to that that at the moment the bill that we will be voting on proposes that we will have for sale, we will have only two types of products, at least at the beginning. This will be live plants that you can grow at your home or dried cannabis for smoking. So that's at the start. But the new agency that will be created if the referendum passes will have the ability to introduce these other classes of products, which Manu was probably talking about, like oils, tinctures, some maybe topicals, creams, and they might be available in the future if that bill passes. Yeah.
Oh, kia ora, Manu. How will your business change if the referendum and the legislation for recreational marijuana goes through?
Probably not much. The company has, the board and management have agreed to support a yes vote in the referendum, but we have no business plans to get into recreational products. Our shareholders came in on the basis that we're producing pharmaceuticals, and that's what we plan to continue with. And we're also very export oriented. So for recreational, it's only ever going to be a domestic market because of the international rules. You can't export for recreational purposes, only for medicinal. And we see that the global market's much bigger than the domestic market in New Zealand's ever going to be. So we're still really focused on pharmaceuticals, and that's where the company's going to continue to be putting its effort. We're export focused. The New Zealand market is not a major part of our revenue projections and things. So if people did shift from pharmaceuticals and New Zealand prescription medicines to those wellness products, it's not going to have major impact on our business models and things. So we're supporting the referendum, but we're not planning to be in that market.
Just a little bit of a backstep there. How did you guys cope during COVID if, you know, everything, a lot of your business is international?
Yeah, fortunately, I'd spent quite a bit of time in the previous 12 months overseas, and particularly in Europe, working with potential partners and selecting. So we just agreed to progress with one company. And so we'll be making an announcement in the next week around a deal that we've secured in Germany. And so that work had been done in terms of the relationship building and everything else we can do online with them. And so that didn't have a major impact. What did have an impact was we stopped our workers from going and tending to the plants, and we pulled the plants at lock. So unfortunately, yeah, those all have been harvested, and we're starting again since lockdown finished. So a bit of a delay. The other companies decided, you know, they made a call that they were essential services and continued to look after their plants, which is great for them, and they've been able to continue on through. So there was quite a diversity of how people responded in that time. And fortunately, most of our staff were able to continue, particularly with that GMP documentation, preparing the applications and things. They were all working from home, so there wasn't a big impact on things from that perspective. And the as I say, the deals with our overseas partner, they've been able to proceed under lockdown.
So that brings me nicely onto the social enterprise model that I understand that you have. Can you talk a little bit about that for our whānau who may not be familiar with that concept, and how you got the hapū and the whānau involved in that?
Yeah, it's a long story, and I'll try and condense it into a couple of minutes. But Ngāti Porou settled with the Crown in 2012, and hapū convened, organised themselves into entities around that. Through that process, and many had a focus on education and cultural revitalization and some conservation projects and things. But so the elephant in the room is jobs and economic development, and I think it's fair to say most of the hapū feel like that's a big challenge and something that they've struggled with. But we worked as Hapu members, I suppose. We worked with a Hapu who were keen to have a plan around that, and we started looking at the range of options and got into focusing on native bioactives, particularly kānuka and kina extracts, with the view to producing high-value products that could be used in natural health products and pharmaceuticals potentially. So that work's gone ahead, and there's some really good science that's been done with Massey, with Cawthron, and most of the universities in New Zealand have been part of some of the projects we've been involved with there. And cannabis was one that we looked at because there's a lot of cannabis that is grown on the East Coast and supplied around the country. Whānau here rely on it. We could see the writing on the wall, and both in terms of medicinal and also legalisation, and if and when that happened, whānau would need to have other income sources and potentially would be interested in legal production. So we set up a charitable company in 2015 called Hikurangi Enterprises, and we weren't quite sure what it was going to do, but we were able to partner with some investors and form some other entities that are connected to that. And the idea is that that charitable company earns commercial revenue. It's owned by a charitable trust in time. And there may be other charitable entities like Hapu Entities and Murai that are the shareholders in that company. But its job is to create income that it can give to the trust. But in the process of creating that income, also create jobs in the community for whānau. And that's, you know, it's a cultural revitalization project as much as anything, because our paepae is thinning out, and if we don't have whānau that are able to live and work here, you know, that's why there's 70-80% of Ngāti Porou live outside the rohe now. So trying to create those opportunities for whānau to be able to come home and have real decent jobs, not dangerous jobs in forestry. And we've seen farming decline over the years, and so yeah, looking for those high value opportunities, and it does require a lot of R&D, which is expensive and high risk and challenging, but it's where, yeah, we see the opportunities long term. So challenge is to find those investors that are willing to take a risk and stick in there, and also to have those structures that can make commercial decisions quickly. Some of our hapu iwi marae structures can, you know, decisions by committee for land blocks and things can take quite a while. And so we've set up this sort of parallel set of entities that can be quite commercially focused and make those decisions quickly. But sort of, yeah, very much in parallel and supporting of the iwi hapu aspirations for revitalizing the community. So yeah, there's a number of entities there, and we did crowdfunding for one of them for the cannabis, and was, you know, very successful with that. But it's yeah, there's a lot of legal work, and we've tried to get really good legal advice and good accounting support and things to make sure that, yeah, everything's tikka and puno, and we're going to do things by the book and have a really good foundation for other commercial activities to grow in time. But yeah, finding those commercial opportunities that are environmentally sustainable. We've had lots of challenges with things like oil exploration and things on the East Coast, and the whānau saying we don't want that stuff. We want things that are going to be good for the land, good for the whenua, good for the moana. And so sort of, yeah, low impact, high value products are where we're trying to focus. And medicinal cannabis was an obvious one. It's been challenging, but we're getting there.
Can I ask a question about social responsibility? Some of our whānau have quite varying views on medical cannabis in general. So what's your approach been to assure people that, you know, the development of this as a business, as a social enterprise, has been handled responsibly? Because I imagine some of our whānau have a fear of it. So what's your strategies and approach there?
Yeah, it's a good question and a constant challenge. You know, we're trying to be the most ethical cannabis company in the world and do things right. There's a group that we've connected to internationally that has what's called the Responsible Cannabis Framework, and that has 12 action areas across environmental, social, and governance that you need to be able to show that you're making progress on in terms of your ethics and sustainability. So that's all around water and land and carbon emissions and how we treat our workers, what we give back to the community, sort of what transparency and anti-corruption policies we and processes we have in place. So those are sort of things that we try to put around it to ensure that there is robust systems in place to ensure that it is ethical. In terms of cannabis, I think when we started out, there was a wide range of views in the community. As we've gone on, whānau have been able to get on board in terms of seeing what we were trying to do, understanding that the benefits of medicinal cannabis, that anecdotally there's heaps of evidence, and when people sort of understand that, and we're not focusing on recreational, it's not something that we're interested in. We've got a KiwiSaver company called KiwiSaver that's invested in us, and they're an ethical KiwiSaver provider, and they have strict rules, and so they're not able to invest if we do get into recreational cannabis. And we've challenged them a bit on that, because from our perspective, there are some ethical reasons for getting involved in that industry as well. Again, it's not something that we're going to do, but the board are very supportive of the referendum being successful, because it has some very positive outcomes potentially for our whānau that have relied on illicit cannabis, but also the control aspect of the bill that's been presented is potentially world-leading in terms of its desire to restrict access to young people, increase the penalties there. And what we've seen from the Canadian experience is that the access by young people dropped by nearly half since legalisation. They haven't seen an increase in motor vehicle accidents related to drug driving and those sort of things. So there's a lot of misinformation and myths around that. But if you look at the official Canadian statistics, it's looking pretty good in terms of the social outcomes from legalisation as well.
Marta, just given what Manu's just said, what policy or legal mechanisms can be actually made available to actually help social enterprises like this?
Yeah, great. I am actually fascinated by the social enterprise model, and it's great to see the work that Hikurangi is able to compete with perhaps better resourced companies, which are entirely 100% commercial and not focused on the communities and so on. It's quite unique on a world scale, because overseas what we've observed is actually very often this social enterprise company finding themselves in a challenging position, and they actually, it's hard with them to compete with better resourced commercial companies, sometimes multinationals, sometimes the big Canadian companies enter other markets. I, for example, researched the reform in Jamaica, which was really challenging for their social enterprises or for illegal growers to transition to the legal economy, because they simply didn't have the resources. So that's something that I think one issue that should be addressed in the law. How are we actually going to help these companies? Because I think that they have benefits for the legal market in New Zealand. So it's interesting that you're asking the bill that we will be voting on, the recreational legalization bill in September. It contains some provisions that give social enterprises some priority. So the bill says that applicants who are able to demonstrate a commitment to the community should be prioritized. So these licenses should be prioritized. It's great to see. We would like to see there more clarity about how actually this social enterprise element will be weighted against other criteria, because there's a range of other criteria in the bill how the licenses are going to be given, and some requirements are very strict, as Manu mentioned. For medical cannabis, you need to make sure that all your processes are up for scratch, that the manufacturing standards, so it's not so easy to establish a social enterprise and compete with much better resourced companies. So what we've seen overseas, unfortunately, is not that encouraging yet, but there is hope. And I hope that in New Zealand, we will achieve some kind of more socially just, and if recreational cannabis is legalized, more diverse market, not only composed of these big commercial companies.
Manu, do you have any further whakaro to what Marta was saying?
No, we didn't write the bill, but it's very, in some ways it's unfortunate we're not going into because we are sort of so aligned with that, those requirements in the bill. And like she said, it will be interesting to see how they prioritise how they weight, and how they value and measure the level of impact that a company can have in the community. They talk about Māori participation in the company or contributing to Māori communities as those communities that have been most disproportionately affected by prohibition and those sort of things. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that's worked out, but really gutsy sort of legislation. And again, I think world leading, and we've got the luxury of being able to look at what has and hasn't worked overseas. And I think they've tried to take the best of what has worked and leave what hasn't, and try to give it as much emphasis on harm reduction and righting some of the wrongs from prohibition as possible. So I think it's a good piece of legislation.
Oh, fabulous.
Can I just add and elaborate on that? I totally support the social enterprise idea. We've been advocating for that, for making the market less commercial, more focused on communities. Playing a little bit of a devil's advocate, at the moment the provisions in the law are quite broad, and my concern, this may not materialize, but my concern is that what's going to happen is we might end up with five big companies, and this social enterprise provision will be just used as a corporate social responsibility. Oh, let's employ some Maori, but it's not genuinely contributing to the community. This is a risk. And I think this is something we have to keep in mind when we when we pass the bill, if people vote yes. We need to make sure that that doesn't happen. This is something that we need to manage and make sure that this is actually benefiting the communities, not harming them.
Kia ora, what a wonderful kōrero. We certainly have the experts today. I'd like to thank you both for illustrating the spectrum, firstly, the difference between medicinal cannabis, marijuana, and then the recreational use, and the broad spectrum which sits in between. So thank you, that's very important. I also feel there is a lot of responsibility taken by the government, and also by through the research that we're hearing, and also as companies. And you know, there's very clear guidelines, and we are learning, it appears, from the international industry, Canada, Jamaica, to inform a best system here. And thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for your input today. Very, very grateful. Ngā mihi kōrua. Any last thoughts there, Tui?
Aore, you covered it well, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's us, whānau. Thank you so much for tuning in to Te Pūtahi today. And we wish you all the best. Hei kona rā. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.